The People's Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Randeep Janda.
Final hour of the People's Show. Now we're earlier today. Canucks Central is going to be earlier, so we can give you Game 5 of the Blues and the Avalanche later today.
I'm calling it. They're closing out today.
Series over tonight?
Done today. I think they wrecked themselves last game.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate. I really think they could have won that series.
They had a temper tantrum. They kind of soiled themselves. They got all pissy. I think it's over.
I really think, you know, Game 3 really got soiled because of that injury.
Yeah.
And I think they would have won. Like, they had a 1-0 lead. Binnington doesn't get hurt. I think they see that one out. And then they're up 2-1. Chance to really put some heat on Colorado. Never materialized.
I find it kind of weird. I know Jordan Binnington is a key member of that franchise. Obviously, his playing goal. But the fact that, like, he means that much to them that after that incident, they're just like, all right, we're losing it. We're going after Nazem Kadri. That's it.
Yeah.
You lost focus on the prize. You took your eyes off the prize.
So bizarre. But we'll see if they can rebound tonight. If they win tonight, I think it goes 7. But, and Game 7, anything can happen.
Yeah.
Maybe Colorado still wins it because it's so hard to burn that much energy to get back into it. But if they win tonight, I think it goes 7.
Yeah, I don't think it, like, they're kind of in the spot, like the Golden State Warriors, the Dallas Mavericks. Like, Mavericks won yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Awesome. But there feels to be like a, like, Colorado hasn't even played their best hockey yet. Like, Nathan MacKinnon hasn't played his best hockey. Feels like he's just holding in a reserve. Credit to Ryan O'Reilly. He's been able to play really well. But it feels like the Avs have another gear, maybe even two, that they're not even hitting right now, Bick.
Before we get to Will Scouch, who'll join us in just a second, let's clean up what's happening in our Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. We asked you a trivia question for two tickets to the Nooner at the Nat on June 3rd. There were six former Canucks on the 2006 gold medal winning team for Sweden. The Sedins and Mattias Olin were three, who Olin just being named to the BC Sports Hall of Fame. Name the other three. Who were they, Randeep?
The correct answer, Mikael Samuelsson, Mats Sundin, and the one that really threw off a lot of people, including Bick Nizar himself.
Yeah.
Sammy Paulson. Remember, he played 19 games with the Vancouver Canucks in 2011-2012, and then he went back to Sweden and played 3 years there and retired. But Sammy Paulson was a third. Congratulations to a few people that got it. But the winner today, randomly selected, Steven Kitts. So the title is heading to the beach in Kitsilano.
Congrats, Steve. Big shout out to everyone texting in. We got a lot more right answers than I thought we would.
Yeah, some of them came in late, which tells me you were looking up Google real strong.
That's fine.
And that's fine. By any means necessary. As Eddie Guerrero once said, lie, cheat, steal. I live that life. I understand.
Big shout out to Steve picking up those tickets to the Nooner at the Nat on June 3rd. Vancouver Canadians back at the Nat. For tickets or info, visit CanadiansBaseball.com. See you at the Nat. Let's talk to Will Scouch from scouting.ca, McKean's Hockey, and also does great work on his own YouTube page. Talk about prospects. You can always follow along at Scouting. Will, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys?
We are always fantastic. Just slowly gearing towards July 7th and 8th when things get real for the Vancouver Canucks and the rest of the NHL for the NHL entry draft. And an exciting time, you know, coming off of the U18s and all that sort of stuff. Have you had to change your board very much from then till now?
No. I mean, I always look at those tournaments as a very good way to evaluate guys just in different scenarios. So guys that I might want to see more of at higher levels getting put in that tournament, or guys that have been playing at a really high level but not on a team that might be as good as you might have seen prior in the year. Just something that switches things up a little bit, changes their line mates around a little bit. Or, you know, in the case of the U.S. team, like, just how good they really are against the best of the best around the world. But in terms of my list overall, not a ton has really changed.
Okay, so one player that's been getting buzz for a few months now. It was Juraj Slafkovský and playing with the World Championship team with Slovakia. Impressed again. He's one of the big dogs on that team. More buzz of him being a real option at number two for New Jersey. What do you think about that? You know, and how much stock do you put into some of these tournaments he's played? Not only the most recent one, but even going back to the Olympics.
Well, I don't know. I think you have to be really careful with analysis like that, because a lot of the guys who are, I would say, on an equal playing field aren't in the tournament. So guys like Logan Cooley and Shane Wright, you know, David Giricek, they're not there. And so Slafkovský obviously is getting a lot of ice time. I mean, if I were the Slovakian coach, I'd probably play him quite a bit. You know, I like Slafkovský. Would I take him at two? No. The way I see it is he's got a lot of potential that he's a what-if guy. Like, he's probably the biggest case of, like, what if it works out, right? He's not the most skilled. He's not the quickest. He's deceptively quicker than you'd think, but that's largely because of just how big he is and how strong he naturally is now. I think he could be one of the better possession wingers out of this year's draft, guys that just excel protecting pucks along the boards, extending offensive zone cycles, you know, making little simple passing plays that can move things along for their line mates a lot better. But in terms of a real rock star core, you know, main producer, 200-foot guy, like these really rare types of players that you have a hard time finding in the NHL, I'm not sure he's quite at that level. You know, he might be in a few years, but I don't know. I think he could be a really, really good sort of auxiliary player that makes like life easier for more skilled and higher paced line mates. But I've seen a lot of what you're talking about with him up at two. I've heard Habs fans thinking about him at one. I think that's just, you know, this happens every year where there's other guys that are kind of a shade below the guys that probably should go in the highest ranges of the draft that get talked about and talked about. The World Championship, he's been very good, but we're not in the business of evaluating who's good at the World Championships. It's who's the best NHL prospects. I think there's gaps in his game, but that's not a bad thing. I think there's a lot of potential, but a long way to go before I think he gets to being that good.
Now, there were some rumors New Jersey could move the pick prior to them winning the lottery. Maybe that still materializes. And we always focus, hey, the team wants to give up a second overall pick. What sort of player would they get on the pro market? Now, two is one that's available. Ottawa picking seventh is apparently available. If we flip that and say, hey, if a team acquires second or seventh overall, what kind of player are they going to try to go get that might kind of attract the eyes of their fan bases? If you're picking second, if you're picking seventh, and you just acquire that, what kind of player are you looking to get in those ranges?
I mean, the thing is the what takes away a bit of your leverage when you're trading a top pick is there's still no guarantees. There's no you're trying to move something that is a speculative asset, so to speak, for something that you want to be able to use right away. So an NHL team is going to look at that and say, well, I'm not going to give you a ton. You know, I want at least something tangible as well as sort of a really good magic bean, but still a bean that I need to nurture. In the past, when picks that are really high in the draft get moved, it's usually in a package with, you know, maybe a bottom six forward. I'm trying to think of examples off the top of my head. I mean, there was a Jeff Carter trade that was pretty massive a long time ago where that involved a pretty high pick. So I don't know, if I'm Ottawa or New Jersey, like if I'm New Jersey, I'm looking for a rock solid defenseman. Maybe not, I think maybe like a top pair guy just for second overall might be a bit asking for too much, but second overall and maybe packaging some of the youth that New Jersey has gathered up over the years might be able to move the needle to land them maybe a really good defensive player to drop in their lineup right away. And I would think about making a move like that. For Ottawa, I don't know. I mean, I think Ottawa still needs a bit of help up the middle. You know, they still have a bit of an uncertain goaltending situation right now. They have some prospects out there, but not a whole lot of real meat in terms of who's going to play net there. So maybe there's a move that can be made there that involves a seventh-round pick. But I'll believe when top picks get traded when they happen, because this seems to happen every year. And I think the prices get really crazy really fast, and I think that's for a reason. But, I would be looking for – I'd be a little bit more conservative on my expectations of what these picks on their own could fetch.
Okay, let's look at the opposite, though. Is there a player at number seven that you would be willing to move up for in the sense to say, all right, there's a guy at seven that, you know, I have my eye on, and if he's available, I make that deal happen. If I'm on the other side of that deal.
Yeah, if someone like Logan Cooley somehow manages to slip to seven, and Ottawa wants to pass on him and maybe make a move to trade back or use that pick to, you know, swing a deal somewhere else, then yeah, I think that's a player where I certainly would be interested. You know, Simon Nemec somehow is available there. He might be, and that might be a situation where I might move up, but I have reservations about him. Outside of that, realistically, with who probably will be available at seven, I think you may as well just sort of sit tight and see what other teams do, because I feel like this is going to be an extremely noisy draft. Certain teams are going to value certain players way more than others, I think. And I think we might be surprised with just who might be available if you just sort of sit tight or even trade back and maybe add some more picks later on. So I think the only real name where I'd go, we're trading up to get this guy at seven, is probably Logan Cooley. But that's only because I'd be really surprised if he slipped all the way to that point.
Are there like tier breakdowns for you? Like where is like the drop off in each of your tiers right now?
Yeah, so that's generally how I think about evaluating the draft, right? Like, I can't stand the thought of this guy is one slot better than this guy.
Right.
This guy is one slot better than this guy. Like, it makes me crazy. So I definitely think about them in groups. So I've got a group of three up top, then a group of three behind them, and then a giant group of guys all the way down to 22. I'm looking at my list now. So, and then beyond that, there's another list that goes about to the end of the first round. So I think there's a pretty... I call it like an uncertainty drop-off, where after I'd say the top six names, there's a lot of question marks with a lot of the players in that range, right? Like guys like Matthew Savoy, Joakim Kamel, Philip Machar, Frank Nazer. Like all these guys are guys that have talent in some areas, but I have questions in others. There are guys that I think have relatively reasonable floors that you can expect, but they're not going to have a huge amount of value, I don't think. Guys like, you know, Kevin Korchinski is a good defenseman, but I don't see him as like a top pair guy. Liam Ogren, I think, could be a rock-solid NHL player, but I don't think he's going to be on your first line or even a second line, you know, being a huge offensive play driver. He could be, but, you know, there's a lot of questions with these guys, and I think that happens really quickly in this draft. Beyond that, then it's kind of like, oh, these are the fun little project guys that show a lot of potential, and maybe there's something there, but if they don't work out, it might be a little bit of a tough call. So maybe that's more of a late first-round pick kind of thing for me. So there's a lot of question marks with a lot of guys this year, but a lot of really interesting talent. And that starts to happen, I'd say, after about six.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Will Scouch talking NHL prospects. And, you know, one of the names that may land in that 15 spot, depending on, you know, what you think of him, and I want to get your thoughts on this as well, is Connor Geeky. Is he a realistic option at 15? And on top of that, what's his ceiling?
Yeah, Connor Geeky is fascinating. I honestly, I've seen him play maybe 9 or 10 times this year, and I still don't know what I think of him. I think it's a bit unlikely that he'll be there at 15. I get the feeling that he's the exact type of player that some NHL teams are just going to zero in on and say, all right, we can work with this guy and see where he's at in a few years, and he could be a real monster. And I think at the end of the day, yeah, you could have a really good 200-foot all-around center that can just play good hockey. He has what I call like real good close quarter skill. So if the puck's bouncing around and he's grinding play out along the boards, or you know, guys are chipping it in on him and he's sort of in that retrieval race, he knows how to sort of get his stick on the puck, get it into space and make a play, even if it's just the first pass to get out of the zone. And that matters. Like that can be a big difference maker in the NHL if you can do that at that level. He seems to kind of fall apart when he's got a bit of open space and he moves his feet and uses his hands and tries to protect the puck a little bit. If he's not just bulldozing through guys, he can sort of fall apart a little bit, lose control, and kind of struggle to really generate consistent offense that way. But can he work on that? Absolutely. He's a big guy. I imagine that it's going to take some time to grow into that frame, and you might have to be a little bit patient. But at the end of the day, I still see him as, you know, a guy that's in the middle six of an NHL team. You know, I think he's pretty easy to project as some kind of NHL player. It's just going to be a matter of how much offense you get out of him. Could he be a really good sort of, you know, plug kind of guy? Not plug in a derogatory sense, but like a good guy, just a glue guy that you put out there down the middle You don't have to worry about him defensively, but he's not going to shoot the lights out for you. But he can make a play here and there that really impresses you. Yeah, I could see that. So at 15, I think that's reasonable. There's a lot of guys in that range for me that I think are maybe riskier but higher upside picks. Guys like Noah Osland, Isaac Howard, Danila Yurov even might be an interesting swing to take there. But Connor Geeky is not too far back on my list from those guys, and I would totally understand why he would be a target in that range.
Another player that's got a lot of love in the last couple of weeks is Marco Kasper, the Austrian who plays for Rogla. You've got him in Tier 5, which you call just a big old whack of interesting players. What's your take on this player in terms of, once again, the ceiling, but also, clearly he's gotten a lot of love in the last 2 weeks here. How do you explain that? Because he's been kind of off the radar before that.
Yeah, I mean, he is playing at the World Championships, and he's playing on Austria. I believe he's playing their first line. Mm-hmm. And if I was, similar to Slifkovsky, if I was the Austrian coach, I'd have him on the first line too. He's just you can very clearly tell the type of player that he is pretty quickly. Like, he's a real good north-south guy. Nice, north-south speed. He's aggressive. He checks. He finishes his checks. He's responsible with his positioning at both ends of the ice. He needs to get a little bit stronger. He can shoot the puck pretty well too, but I would think he's more of one of these, put him in front of the net and slap away at rebounds or being a tipping threat kind of thing. He's a really interesting and well-rounded player that I think has some room to grow. Do I think he's got enormous upside in the NHL? I don't know. Maybe if he works on his agility and his skill level in open ice and just sort of navigating pressure, because right now he's more of a, I don't know how to explain it, more of a grinder with a bit of that sort of simple offensive approach to the game that can work in the NHL. Like, we're watching the playoffs right now, and guys like him can get a little bit more value by just being that the last guy to get the puck on to get the puck off his stick in front of the net or something. Like, these little grindy little plays that can make a difference. So I think with that combined with the size and the fact that he played in the SHL all year and had a pretty good playoff run, I think there's a lot to like about him, and he has moved up my list after I've circled back and watched him a little bit more. But I still think that there's a little bit of a limited upside there, but a pretty safe projection as some kind of, responsible NHL player.
Talking to Will Scouch about the 2022 NHL entry draft. Before we really go, I do want to ask you a couple of things. So we're seeing these trends in the NHL, and I always kind of think of how this applies heading into the entry draft. And we've talked a lot about shot quality and just shot selection while watching these playoffs. And I do think there's a big difference between having a good shot not being the same as being a good shooter. Because I do think if your shot selection is poor, that takes away from your actual ability to how good of a shooter you are. How do you grade that?
I 100% agree. I think it's a big reason why I track data. Because I want to know where the guys are taking their shots from. I want to know what the balance between their offense is between shots and shot assists. Like, where's their offense coming from? And there's a few guys this year where I've watched them, and Joakim Kamel comes to mind, Rucker McGroarty comes to mind, Jimmy Snuggerud. These are all guys that I've been told, hey, these guys are great goal scorers. Cutter Gauthier is another one. Like, they're saying, these guys can score. But pretty much across the board, their data shows that they're not much else in terms of offense. Like, they're not very good at sort of distributing pucks as much as other guys. They have low rates of shot assists, or at least very inconsistent levels. And where their shots are coming from are, not the most dangerous scoring areas. So that to me is something you can at least kind of work on, and you can analyze these players and go, okay, well, if they've got some skill and agility, maybe it's just a matter of, okay, instead of shooting from this area, like, maybe take an extra half second, cut inside, make that cut and try to get a more dangerous chance. And some guys might respond to that and it might work. But it is an uncertainty thing. And I've seen guys over the years with data that's like that. Like, Alexander Holtz was another one where there's a few of them like that this year, where his shot metrics weren't great at both ends of the ice. His individual shots were coming from all over the offensive zone, just basically catch and release all day. And that has been a bit of a struggle for him to sort of get over relative to other guys that were drafted really high in that draft. It's not a total negative thing, but it might prolong the amount of time it takes for them to sort of hit what their potential is. But it absolutely is a thing, and it certainly factors into my analysis all the time, because goals usually are not scored from anywhere outside of that home plate area or that between the face-off dots kind of area. It's pretty rare, and so at least not without tips or without some sort of traffic in front, which, you know, it's to me noisy and hard to predict. So I'm always looking for those guys that, even if they have shooting talent, those guys who can get inside and get those chances that can actually project to scoring in the NHL.
The other thing I do want to ask you too is, like, maybe like low event players, or maybe just players that are get overlooked per value. For instance, like in this market, people are trying to project defensive D-men to play next to Quinn Hughes down the road. Now, you know, you typically want low maintenance type of players. What do those types of players need to do to kind of be like risers for you to show that they could go in the first round, they do have significant value?
I think one way to think about it for me is so I do a lot of transition tracking, both offensive and defensive, and there are, I do really look at how defensemen get involved in defensive transitions and what they prefer to do and how effective they are with their checking and with their stick checking and with their positioning. So some guys will just know where to be in the right time to anticipate a dump in, and they'll be right there in the path of the puck and stop it and turn the play around right away. Or some guys will be willing to sort of step in and get physical, or step in and get in their stick checks. Personally, I don't really care how you do it. I just want efficient defense. I don't care how big you are. I don't really care. But I do think that there are traits that assist you defensively, things like mobility. So it's not all about speed. It's about how you can change directions on your feet, how you close gaps on guys, how quickly you can close gaps on forwards. All of these things and how they sort of intertwine. I look at defense and sort of go, I set aside all of sort of the sort of you know, anecdotal evidence. Oh, you know, this guy's 6'4" and has a big reach, therefore X, Y, Z. I sort of go, you know, if you can move and you get involved defensively and you also play, I would say, proactive defense of you get the puck back and then it's hard for the opponent to get the puck off you. That to me is sort of a way of preventative defense. You don't have to play defense in the first place. I look for guys like that. So I know kind of what you're saying when you're talking about, oh, let's get someone to play with Quinn Hughes. But to me, I would sort of rethink it a little bit and go, well, who can be another defenseman who might not be as offensive leaning, but still has this kind of skill level and the skating ability and the sort of stick work that a guy like Quinn Hughes can bring to the table, but just in a bit of a different sort of flavor, and finding someone like that. I think that those players could offset each other just as well as finding some, you know, big, rangy, physical defenseman that can sort of clear the front of the net.
All right, Will, before we let you go, we love taking a question from the people as well. Tim and East Van asking, and I feel like 31 GMs across the league are asking the exact same question. Is there a Tom Wilson type of player in this draft?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's hard to say. I've thought about this a lot because I get asked it a lot. The name that comes to mind is maybe the closest thing, but I don't think has quite the diverse. I mean, I like Tom Wilson as a hockey player when he's not, you know, endangering people. I like him, but it's a matter of the skill and the pace of his game that I think I like. He's a really typical power forward. I think Nathan Gauthier is a good example of that. He's a 6'3" center. I who knows if he'll stick at center? I don't know. But, you know, he's not slow at all. He's a really fast guy. When he gets moving in the offensive direction, he can really crush guys along the boards. Which is pretty rare nowadays when you with these 17, 18-year-old kids. But he really goes, and he's no slouch when it comes to making plays either. Like, he didn't score a ton this year, and I don't think he has a ton of upside with regards to he's the next Tom Wilson. But I also feel like he's got that kind of a role in his future, maybe further down the lineup, but just a hard-nosed, physical, intense guy with the ability to make plays out of nothing along the boards, grinding it out and stuff. Just that simple profile that can be effective.
Will, we appreciate it as always. People can find you at Scouching on Twitter and also youtube.com/scouching tonight or tomorrow for your stream.
It is tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern time, so that's 5 Pacific, yes.
Make sure you check it out. Get all your info on the 2022 NHL entry draft. We'll talk soon, pal. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, of course. Anytime. Thanks, guys.
Will Scouch joining us here on
Dropping Knowledge.
Really good stuff. The shooting thing, really interesting for me.
Yeah.
Just because we're always talking about, you know, getting better shooters. And look, to be honest, the Vancouver Canucks need long-distance shooters on this team. They don't have enough guys who can create outside of that key area.
Yeah.
But they also don't have a lot of guys that can break into that area either. Like, realistically, to threaten, like, the shape of the defense, it's really only Elias Pettersson and JT Miller that can do that with their shot. But then it's also about finding better shot selection. And you can't get enamored with someone that's just got a great shot, but, you know, they're just constantly rifling it from wherever.
Well, okay, and they do have to get better at that. But I look at the Florida Panthers. During the regular season, they were that team that could find the middle of the ice. They could find those really good areas to get the shots off from. And remember that game against the Canucks where the Canucks played pretty well, but it felt like every time Florida came up the ice, they scored. Or whenever they got that certain part of the ice. In the playoffs, and as the texter texted in with the Florida Panthers, breaking down Tampa was very difficult. So, to your point, being smart and finding those areas to shoot and getting off those, you know, providing a real efficiency to your game. We're not just peppering the net with a bunch of shots. Are you finding those high-quality moments? Florida was doing that in the regular season. In the playoffs, the degree of difficulty went way up. So it's not only can you find those moments, can you find them in playoff hockey? That is the ultimate test of, or is your team good enough? So I think a really interesting thought there. Also on the Quinn Hughes partner element, are you looking for a lock-it-down guy? No, not necessarily. You're looking for probably somebody who has maybe certain attributes like Quinn Hughes, but maybe not as offensive. So rather than finding the Mark Mathot, you try to maybe get somebody that's a little bit more, in today's game, a little bit more that is, you know, offensively suited, but not quite Quinn Hughes. So you still want an individual that can transition the puck well, that can skate the puck out of trouble. So, you know, just who is that? I think there's, in the draft, you have to start looking at 2 or 3 years, maybe 4 years down the road. But that's a question that the Canucks have to answer this year as well, because upgrading that right-hand side is going to be one of the major priorities alongside what they do with that top six. Like, the right side is still as good as Luke Shen was this year, as great as he was as the dad of that back end. Fact of the matter is you still have to continue to be better and raise that floor.
Bick Nizar, Randy Janda, a little late there with Will. So we'll get to Don't At Me on the other side. Send in your submissions now, 650-650, into our Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. But we'll go to break, come back in a bit with your hot takes into our Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Bick Nizar, Randy Janda, home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Is the People Show with Bick Nizar and Randy Janda.
Final segment of the show. We'll turn it over to Safir Shah, Dan Riccio on the way, Canuck Central. Kevin Woodley will join him as he does every Wednesday. Song's fire. Is this our usual last segment? Song?
No, it's not. Is this from the catalog of unlicensed music? It
really?
Is.
I've always been saying the People Show music hits the best.
I've never heard the song on the radio. I don't know if any of the shows, other shows use it, but please stash this so nobody can use it.
We can't hear you. You gotta turn your mic off.
The song is so good that it just tuned out Lena.
It's stashed in your show.
Oh, okay.
You know what? You guys are the only show that has the hip-hop instrumentals.
Yeah.
That's why we dig it back here.
Fair.
But I wouldn't count this
is fire.
As a hip-hop instrument.
No, it's not hip-hop.
No, this is not hip-hop.
I'm a strictly hip-hop guy, but even I like this.
This
I mean,
is a fire-up song.
Like low-key, the Canucks should skate out to this.
The Abbey Canucks, yeah.
Okay, now it's starting to go a bit synth.
Yeah. Now it's starting to slow down a little bit.
But nevertheless.
This ain't NHL skate-out quality. It's AHL skate-out quality. Abbey Canucks, sure.
All right.
Because it's unlicensed.
Yeah.
There you go.
I dig
budget
it.
Budget version.
We're wrapping up the show strong. Fire with the music. Fire with your takes. Don't At Me coming up in just a second. So get those submissions into our Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Oh, actually, a lot already coming in. It's going to be fire, I see. Some news, a report.
I'll actually use in my Don't At Me. How about we do that?
He was going to be your Don't At Me?
Yes, he was.
Oh, okay. Okay, well then we may as well bypass all the conversations we're going to have. We'll go straight to it. Do it every day here on The People Show. Don't At Me.
Your takes uninterrupted. Don't At Me. Text in your submissions to 650-650.
Don't at me. I said, what a hell.
Brought to you by LeaseBusters. Get out of your vehicle lease with ease, confidence, and a LeaseBusters leasing specialist who guides you through the journey. Go to LeaseBusters.com to start the process today.
I'll get it started. Don't at me. Just when we started appreciating Alex Chason, it looks like he is leaving us. Yes, a report coming from Europe, Omar Gargantini, reporter with a Swiss outlet, reporting that Canadian 31-year-old striker, or forward as he calls him, Alex Chason, could be the sixth foreigner on HC Lugano this year from Vancouver. We will know more soon. So there you go. Hints that Alex Chason is considering a move to Switzerland to play for HC Lugano.
Never have to worry about a PTO ever again.
Nah, he's like, straight cash into the bank account. Don't have to go play in the NHL for 2 weeks and see where I land. Nope. Potentially going to the Swiss League, which is...
It's a good gig to get in Switzerland.
It is. You know, a lot of former Canucks ended up playing there. Mason Raymond, Andrew Ebbett. You know, I think Max Lapierre had a stint also with HC Lugano, actually. So, a few former Canucks. But that is the report that is coming from Swiss media outlet currently right now. It's not a done deal, saying that he could be the sixth foreigner on HC Lugano. They will know more soon.
All right.
Just when we started appreciating him, Vic.
It's unfortunate. Who will replace those goals in front of the net? I'm not even just facetiously saying that.
Actually.
He was legit important. Legit played a role. Brought value.
Well, this is an opportunity for who then? Like, hey, is it Juho Lamico? Get greasy in front of the net? Will Lockwood? Maybe.
Love it. All right. 650, 650. What do you got?
Joss in Sycamus coming in with Don't At Me. The unlicensed music track has me immediately feeling like I'm watching a forklift instructional video. Very, very specific. Fair. Very specific.
All right. Don't At Me. JFID. As a diehard Canucks fan, it's weirdly satisfying seeing Markstrom get scored on.
Seeing your exes fail is a nice thing. JFID is saying.
Yeah.
Okay, but you didn't feel that with Chris Tanev. A lot of Canucks fans were loving the Chris Tanev, like, warrior status.
You know what? I gotta admit, that was very uncomfortable watching that yesterday. I know it's like, oh, wow, what a warrior being out there. You know what? I think we overlooked that. It's like, you still have to play well. And I'm not blaming Chris Tanev. You want to fight for your job. He's doing the absolute maximum
he can do.
But if you can't do the job, then you really shouldn't be out there. And I was really surprised they put it. It was very clear. Like, I know he got an assist, and he battled.
He did help limit McDavid to 2 points, which,
but like, he was also responsible. Like, a healthy Chris Tanev solves that second goal.
Yeah.
Like, he clears the front of the net. I think a lot of D-men could have cleared the front of the net there. But it was very obvious he wasn't going to be able
to do it. When he's kind of laboring and he's dropping the shoulder, you can tell that, man, he's not right.
Like, he was struggling holding the stick.
It makes you appreciate what Chris Tanev is, but at the same moment, I'm also like, man, I hate seeing Chris Tanev like that.
My Don't At Me is Chris Tanev should not have played last night. Like, that was, we can sit here and be like, oh, warrior. And I'm all for, like, everyone plays through pain. It's professional sports. That's why they get compensated the way that they do. It is carnage on their bodies. But you still have to be able to do the job. And I really worried that Chris Tanev wasn't going to be able to do the job effectively last night. And that was kind of proven.
But if you're Daryl Sutter, you're saying, hey, man, he couldn't do the job and he was still probably our best defenseman.
The message from Daryl Sutter is, hey, look what he's doing at 40%. What are you guys doing?
Yeah.
And that's a fair message to make, but you still have to be able to win the game. And I don't know. I didn't think that was... I just thought it was a weird look. That's all.
It's a strange one. And as somebody who's obviously worked in the same market as Chris Tanev, covered him for a number of years. Yeah, it made you feel kind of uneasy. We got Marcus and Gibson's coming in with, Don't At Me. Last night's goal against Mike Smith won't be his worst by the end of the playoffs. Won't be his worst. How can I get... Like behind the net, behind your own net, you shoot it down? How does it get any worse?
Maybe he has like a Marty Brodeur moment where it's like he goes to handle the puck beside the net and just goes off his stick and in.
Or a goalie goal with Mike Smith in net. So Markstrom,
puck.
Mike Smith or Darcy Kemper end up scoring on him.
Don't at me, Rager. But Liverpool and Chelsea have to stop wearing those hideous yellow kits. Big agree.
Okay, the only yellow kit I've ever liked.
Arsenal's?
Arsenal's back in the day. Like that bright.
What a surprise.
That was the only one I liked. But like the new age ones, that's an old school one. That's more of a retro vibe.
I just don't understand. Like
the new age ones are kind of weird, but they're kind of neon-y as well.
Why isn't Arsenal's second kit like white?
It used to be for a bit.
Yeah,
the
like
Highbury,
Liverpool, just,
final
just
year
wear
at
white.
Highbury. And they had that weird strawberry ice cream kind of look. The strawberry shortcake ice cream. Remember the marble slab kind of look?
Yeah. Man United had a pink one.
Yeah,
too.
It was a weird look. I bought it.
Well, like Liverpool, like they used to have a black kit, I think.
Yeah.
And you can just wear white. I don't know.
We got
Chelsea, I can understand the yellow, because I'm not sure what Chelsea's secondary color is. But still, you can wear white as well. Nevertheless.
We got this one from Kyle from the island. Don't at me. The Corey Perry curse will continue this year as Tampa will lose to Colorado.
Wait, is that a curse to go to the finals?
And lose in the finals, because he hasn't won with Dallas. He hasn't won with
Montreal,
right? So he's kind of like Marian Hossa without the cup, though. Remember when Marian Hossa was doing that, bouncing around?
Sure. I mean, we're calling a Hart winner and a Richard winner and a cup winner a curse now?
I love him. He was my wild card at the beginning of the playoffs.
I'd love to have a Corey Perry curse. Are you kidding me?
But it gets to a certain number, though, when you're just like, man, you haven't won the cup in so many tries. But to be fair, he has won a cup.
Mm-hmm.
Early days. So at least he's got that going for him.
Don't at me, Rager again here. The solution to helping fix the Whitecaps and Lions' popularity in the city, well, start us for the Lions, maybe have a CBA, would be to take the roof off the upper bowl. Take the roof and the upper bowl off of BC Place and just have a 27,000 seat stadium.
So the roof and the upper bowl. So
get the province to agree to that one.
A, yeah, first of all, it's not even owned by any of the franchises. B, in a city that sees a lot of rain, that's a lot of maintenance.
Yes.
Right? That's a lot of maintenance. And the third thing on top of that is, if anything major happens to the city again, Olympics, the World Cup, you think they want more than 27,000 people in that stadium for the World Cup? Absolutely they do. You're really cut off the options. Is that still a world-class venue if it's at 27,000 people?
No.
No, man.
Dan in Fort St. John, Markstrom, don't at me, has to be limited to 45 games in the regular season if a team expects him to play well in a cup final. So that's what, 20-some-odd games to get to the cup final?
Yeah.
Well, 18 to 21 games, somewhere in that range you expect to play.
Yep. So you're total
so 45
games,
plus 45, what is it, 63 games?
You're looking in that range. And he played 63 during the regular season alone this year. Which I think the cutoff for me is like 55 is what I'm looking at. To say if you go above that, then you're saying wear and tear. But interesting text. We got this one. Don't at me. Maybe I wasn't that bad after all. Signed, Dan Kluche.
Hey, man, I'm a Dan Kluche truther.
Okay. I love Dan Kluche because he was feisty. He was challenging the entire, Tampa Bay Lightning bench?
I think mechanically, Dan Kluche was a lot of fun.
Or the Rangers bench, sorry?
Like, as a goaltender, I thought he was good.
He was fiery. He was challenging dudes. He was fighting dudes.
But there's more to just being the technique guy. Gotta have it. Gotta have composure. Gotta have poise. And didn't always come through.
No, and one thing that I remember talking to Brian Burke as well, he's mentioned this in interviews, is that, hey, we talked to the players. We talked to Nazzy and Burt and all these guys, and they had faith in him. So his teammates had faith in him. They came back with him. Didn't work out. Thanks for the text, though, Dan Kluche.
Appreciate it. 650, 650. Don't at me if you got thoughts. Send them in. 650, 650.
Keep the water guy coming in with, don't at me. Cavallini will get a red card yet again, and the Whitecaps will lose to Cavalry FC tonight. So the Canadian Championship match kicks off. So keep the water guy. I'm not sure if he's a Whitecaps fan or if he's a hater, but at this point, they're kind of one and the same, aren't they?
A lot of hate watchers at time.
A lot.
This one. Mike Smith, don't at me. Brophy from Campbell River. Mike Smith better than Demko, and I'm a Canucks fan. Sorry, that's Jackson Brophy. Don't at me.
That's a take.
That's a take. And he's a Canucks fan.
Better at what? He didn't specify goaltending, though. Can we get some clarification? Better like hair maintenance? Like, I don't know. What?
Puck handling? Hair maintenance. I mean, Demko did have to shave his head.
He did, right? Hair hygiene? I'd probably go with Thatcher on that one.
Don't be hating on the curls.
He's got a look of like a wild man.
Like, I do wonder like how that, like the helmets, it's like, is that
I'm
even.
Telling you, that was the issue yesterday.
Is that even comfortable?
Is he wearing some sort of skull cap underneath there that keeps the hair in? Does it flow right over his, like, these are the questions we need answered with Mike Smith. Get him on the show.
Is that like a custom helmet?
Does he do a ponytail that we don't see?
Is it bigger at the top? He should break out.
Does he have a man bun?
The baby blue bandana like Kelly Rudy. That would be strong. Kelly's covering the series. Give him some tips.
I feel like Mike Smith is like one of the most interesting people in hockey that nobody really knows much about other than his puck handling.
Pete in Poco, don't at me. Please stop saying finals. I've given up on you guys using locker room and jerseys, but finals is only misused by the NBA. There's only one series to do the S. Is a needless American affection.
So, okay, NBA Finals is the way that they have it. Like, that's how it's marketed. Stanley Cup Final.
Final.
What else are we? Conference Final or Finals? If there's plural.
Well, there's two conference finals.
Yeah, exactly.
Do we do this regularly?
I didn't think so, but Pete and Poco has had enough.
Pete and Poco, if you're calling us out, okay. We'll try to be better about it. I didn't think we've been doing that, but nevertheless, we're here to be judged and criticized just like everything else.
Poco's coming out strong right now. Poco Josh, don't at me, but you should lose the background music. Right as Poco Josh's text came in, the music cut off. The power that the people have on this show.
The music is part of the appeal. They're like, the horns are going, don't at me.
Distracts you from our voices.
It's like a fanfare to draw attention to your take. It's like the old. I'm not going to do like
it. Helps with the pauses
medieval.
That we have sometimes, where
something like that.
Yeah, please. That was like me in high school band back in the day.
You were in high school band?
I was actually, but not playing trumpet.
Can I guess? I don't know.
What requires the least amount of work?
Cymbals?
No, percussions. You got to be on the beat. I actually played the bass and the keyboard,
no,
the bass lines.
Marching band? No,
no, no, no. It was just the. I'll be completely honest. The reason I actually joined the band was because every like 2 or 3 years, they would go to Europe.
Smart move.
And you know what happened? The one year that I was supposed to go, there was a teacher's job action that got canceled. So I got to go to Disneyland. So that's why I joined band, to actually go on a European trip, a European vacation, and they canceled it.
So you learned bass for no reason?
Pretty much.
Bass guitar? Or
a little bit of that, but also like
what's
keyboard
the other
mostly.
Bass? Oh, bass?
Like, no, not like the big old, no, not the string. No, but like, you know, are you talking about like a bass guitar? Yes. And like a keyboard. So the bass line.
Right.
Probably,
yeah.
Okay. That's
so yeah, a little bit of both.
Easiest. I was going to say tambourine.
No.
Or like the triangle, like you said, Vic.
So, okay. If you learn those.
The timpani, is that what it's called?
But if you learn those, you had to learn like actual drums too.
Right.
And I wasn't that coordinated, man.
Because he was a cello guy. Care that?
What? Yeah, that's a different band. That was a different one. That was the strings.
This one, Kevin and Port Moody, don't at me. Mike Smith wasn't blaming his defense. He was just like, WTF, how did that happen? Maybe he was expecting a whistle. I don't know.
He was screaming up at the hockey gods. Why me? Why does this happen to me?
This one, don't at me. Don't you find it odd that Kadri injures Binnington with no consequences and Aaron Rome was suspended in the Stanley Cup final for a hit that was 0.2 seconds late. Still hurting.
This unsigned texture is still hurting after, what, 11 years now? 11 years.
Look, I'm not here to tell you how to fan, but I've said many times on these airwaves, it's like you have to sit down and process. Take your time, process it, and it is time to move on.
You know what's a great way to process it? Confession Fridays. If you have a confession, a deep, dark secret, or just a way you want to like get something off your chest, maybe it's 2011 related. Confession Fridays here on The People Show. helps you do that.
It's getting here faster than I realized. Like, I woke up today and I was like, okay, Wednesday show, what are we talking about? I was like, Wednesday show? We're less than 48 hours away from Confession Friday again.
I used to look forward to the weekend, you know, anytime, anytime, right? Like, any job.
I don't care.
Now it's Confession Friday.
Absolutely. I'm surprised how quickly I bought into. I was very concerned. Like, I was away that Friday, you guys launched it, and you're like, oh, can't we... Bick, you can't wait to see this new segment we have. I was like, I don't know, guys.
Yeah, Bick was like kind of measured.
Sounds
He's like, you guys are hyping it.
This is what I was saying on air, too. You guys should have seen the group chat. I was like, what happened while I was away? Because I didn't even hear it.
The greatest thing in history.
And now I'm like all the way in.
Don't at me. We got a couple more trickling
I've
in
learned more about my friends than I wanted to know because they're texting me things.
Oh, like, yeah. We've learned a lot.
Still need to maintain some objectivity between our friendships here.
We've learned a lot about listeners as well that, you know, we know. Maybe sometimes we even met out in the community. There's certain things that I now know about you, the listener, that I never thought I wanted to know. And I'm still not sure if I want to know.
And we are happy about that.
We are. We got Don't At Me. The Flames without Tanev look a lot like the Canucks without Tanev.
Fair.
Yeah. It hasn't
Kevin
good.
And Port Moody. I wasn't going to rehash this because, again, I just said let's move on from 2011 talk. But Kevin and Port Moody wants to send in LMAO, Don't At Me, that Rome hit was not 0.2 seconds late.
0.2 might be a bit of a half a second.
It was
0.7.
Bit of a stretch on that 0.2, but nevertheless. I intended to just like move past it. I read it verbatim, but yes, Kevin and Port Moody.
We're not supposed to at you in this thing, right?
Yes.
Brandon and Poco coming in. Don't
Kevin
at
and Port
me.
Moody's right, is basically what I'm saying here.
Kevin and Pomo is also a Washington Capitals fan, so he's going to make sure that he salt in the wound of Canucks fans. Brandon and Poco. Poco's strong today. A lot of text from Poco.
It.
Don't at me. Hey, Mike Smith, quit trying to be me. Signed yet again, Dan Kluche.
I did the beach ball meme last night.
Yeah.
And the Oilers won, so it didn't really land as well as it should. But some people were like, that's Vancouver's thing. It's like, he just let in a goal from the other side.
It was worse than the Lidstrom goal.
Let's just have a laugh here. But Oilers fans got mad at me last
night. Yeah, I've had the experience of engaging with Oilers fans on YouTube because we do a weekly segment on YouTube. Oilers fans get very angry very quickly. Like, Canucks fans are wild on Twitter, too. Oilers fans, because it feels like they have, like, the chip on their shoulder that they've won cups and they had Gretzky, they really take things personally. They get very seriously. Very serious.
That's all they got. What are they supposed to do? Enjoy the view?
Now we got, Vic, we got a bunch of 2011 texts rolling in. I don't want to go down that road.
You know what? A perfect time to end the show.
I am done with 2011.
Perfect time to end the show. We'll leave that to be Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah's problem. They're on the way. It's also overrated, underrated on their show today. A very popular Wednesday segment. Speaking of segments that are sweeping the Vancouver airwaves, overrated, underrated on the way. Kevin Woodley's also going to be joining the show as well.
I saw Sat's overrated, underrated on Twitter.
Oh,
craft
right.
beer.
Yeah.
I'm going to say underrated.
I can't
remember. It's your fault if you're getting a strawberry IPA or something. That's on you.
That's fair.
That's on you. That's not on the beer. I'm saying it's underrated.
They're just trying things.
Exactly. If they got options there.
I can't remember who tweeted this. My computer has now died, so I can't look it up. But I saw a reply to that tweet, and it said, craft beer overrated. The experience of going to craft breweries underrated. And that I totally agree with.
And therefore, to me, it's about the experience.
Yeah.
So I'm saying underrated.
Going to a brewery is very much underrated. But
I might go right now.
Nice. I'll see you there. Vic Nizar, Randy Janda. We're out of here. People's show back tomorrow. We'll see what happens tonight. Colorado and St. Louis on our airwaves. Maybe we get a game 6. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.